Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that's not the familiar slap of the bass, but with our new music, it's time for the weekend wrap. Well, we had quite an interesting series of bouts on TV this weekend, brought to us here of PVC and also Golden Boy. We'd like to thank them for keeping the spirit going. And I'm going to pull John Scully in here right quick. Pull John and Layman in, because there's a couple of things that we wanted to talk about this weekend. Of course, find out a little bit more about what's going on with John also. So see if we can get the man in here on the phone. By the way, I was just reading an article before we came on the air where Triple G says that after the Canelo fight, he'll retire or possibly think about a trilogy with Canelo. I'd like for some of our listeners to call in on this and see what they think about it. I'm also going to ask Gibran what he thinks about this. Personally, I think it's all part of the hype, if you ask me. I realize that Triple G is not getting any younger. What is he, 37, 38 now, somewhere around in there. So I can definitely understand fighting Canelo if it makes sense. And especially if this first fight turns out to be competitive. It can't be a blowout for either one. So let's delve into that a little bit. I see I have my co-host, Mr. Gibran Clement. Gibran, what's going on tonight?
Nothing much, JK. Just chilling.
And we had the champion tonight. What's going on, my man?
Hey, what's going on, folks? How y'all doing?
Oh, everything is going great. Gibran, I'm going to try to get Scully in here, and why don't you start off talking with Layman, and when I get back, we're going to talk a little bit about that suspension thing, okay?
Oh, okay. But we got to find out, do we got the champ here, or we got politically correct Layman Brewster this week? Which one?
That's fine.
Yeah, man. Well. But the situation that we've been talking about, champ, the last couple of weeks, and we spoke to some fighters that's been in a similar situation, and we talked to some promoters and trainers about the Franco situation and about the process of after being knocked out, the suspension time, and the regulations and rules during the suspension, and how the camp handles a fighter after being KO'd and his team. So, as you know, with Franco's situation, he fought in March, and since March, he had two fights within 77 days. And, you know, our thing is to protect the fighters. You know, we want to protect the fighters because, as we know, you know, you guys are warriors. Sometimes you have to be protected from yourself. So we just want your insight on it. Have you had any experience with that after a loss, a KO loss, either being support of a fighter or you dealing with it yourself? And what are some of the protocols that follows that?
Well, you know, it's hard to say, man, because, see, I personally didn't deal with that, but I do know of stories. But, see, back then things had changed because, you know, like, for instance, the whole the ID registration book, your passport, so to speak, that was kind of new back then, because before then, when I was coming up as an amateur, you still had guys that were pros that would fight in one town, get knocked out, drive to the next town the next night, and get knocked out again. So I came behind that era. Now, when I had got registered as a professional, we had these fighter ID identification books, and it follows you everywhere you go. You couldn't fight unless you had that fighter ID book that I believe they still have today. And if that is the case, I remember the first 30 days would be a suspension if you got knocked out. The second time, it was something like a automatic 60 to 90 day suspension. And then you would have to pass all these tests. You have to take all these MRI tests and things like that for your brain, whatever you call it, CAT scan. Yes, and all of those kind of tests. And then I just see now what I remembered was that if you got stopped, it was like 30 days, and then the next time 60, 90 days, and then the third time it was like you were expelled, you know, indefinite from boxing. So I don't know what the laws are today, man. I'm quite interested to hear what you guys have to say about that. But I've never heard about a professional here lately turning around and fighting under the mandatory days, because then, you know, that's breaking the law, and that whichever city would sanction that, then that commission should be penalized, and they should lose their license and be fired.
But not only just the commissions, but let's look a little closer at the situation. Well, what about that fighter's family? What about that fighter's team, his trainers, or his management, his promoters? You know, what about them thinking about the protection of the fighter, especially in Franco's situation where, you know, he was back in the ring within 30 days for his first fight, and within, you know, 77 days from that first knockout?
Well, if it's within the law, then it's okay no matter what, as long as he passed the mandatory, you know, physicals. It's okay, but, you know, again, if he did something where he went outside of obeying the laws, then he should be punished for it. And then, you know, when it comes to a team, man, you don't know, you never know who their people are, so to speak. And I don't know who the people are behind him. I don't know what was going on in his case, because maybe it could be his people telling him, hey, we don't want you to take it. But at the end of the day, he's a grown man. He make his own decisions. Or, you know, at the same time, it could be his team saying, hey, okay, you know what? What happened is behind you. Let's move forward. But maybe he wasn't ready. I mean, you just don't know.
But you said some key things, champ, about MRI or CAT scan or physical. We spoke to a fighter, and I've spoken to a couple of fighters since we've done the interview, and they all stated that they didn't go through any medical, like, precaution. Just, you know, the one fighter said that his team just reached out to him and asked him, you know, how he was feeling, you know, checking up on him. And another fighter just said, you know, it was basically on him. You know, he decided when he was going back in the gym and he was hitting the bag, he was missing the gym and of that sort within his suspension time. It was basically no oversight on the situation.
Interesting. Well, I thought in these cases, as a professional, I thought it was enforced by the boxing commissions. You know, I thought that was the sole duty of the boxing commission is to enforce the laws, because they know that fighters would not listen if they didn't enforce them. So on his passport, in order for him to fight again, I'm sure it would have came up. He's not eligible to fight until that sanction was moved off his record.
Well, here's the thing: the sanction was removed, but there was never any follow up. You know, in other words, the sanction was removed, but no one from the commission came to, you know, to talk to him. There was no medical, CAT scans or anything like that involved. Basically, I think that it was after the one fighter. It was after, I think it was, he said 60 some days or something like that. He was able to get back in the ring, and you know, they called and asked him a few questions, but he was never visited by any medical personnel. The other fighter, the other fighter is younger, a lot younger, less than 20 bouts, and he got knocked out. It was a flash knockout, but yet and still, he said that he never received a visit from any medical staff either. It was either on the phone or his team calling and asking him, hey, how do you feel? You want to fight? We keep talking about, you know, not having a union, and, you know, as you said, the commission is supposed to look over these things. But once again, it comes back to money. If the guy's eligible to fight and his price is right, then, it seems not to make that much of a difference. So my question to you, Layman, is have things really changed that much?
Well, it sounds like things have changed. It sounds like things have changed from when I was fighting, because, you know, when I was fighting, I know that there was a mandatory waiting period that you know, and then you had to see doctors, come back with these CAT scan tests and all that kind of crap, even for something that was not related to boxing in terms of being stopped, you know, just being injured in any kind of way. So it's kind of surprising to hear, especially in these times, man. You would think that the system would be, you know, locked down. You would think that we wouldn't be having this conversation. So it's just as much of a surprise to me as it is to you guys, man, because this would be the furthest thought from my mind would be hearing these things, you know?
Now I'm kind of perplexed here, because when in the age of safety, And especially when we see what we've seen a heavyweight go down, we've seen, you know, Franco go down, we've seen, you know, some long lasting effects, you know, to other fighters. And a lot of these guys, like I said, these are young fighters, you know, like Mr. Franco, for instance, Mahmoud. I mean, you know, these are guys that are in their 40s or 50s, anything like that. Most of them in their late 20s. So we don't want a union. We want to protect the fighter. We put rules in place to protect the fighter, but they aren't adhered to. So who should oversee this, Layman? Since, I mean, should we have, you know, like, and I know this word always freaks everybody out and whatnot, but should we have some type of independent agency come in? I mean, you know, we know that VADA, you know, if they're involved in that, they're much closer regulated. But is that the solution, Lena, that we, you know, make it a VADA-type test mandatory before every fight for every fighter?
Yeah, I think you pretty much summed it up, man. I think the answer lies within the boxing commissions of each state, because they can be held responsible should you go out there and get killed because you suffer from some type of brain trauma from a previous fight. It could be held, in my opinion, two ways. It could be held on a promoter, which I think that would actually probably be the easiest way to go. Or you, again, it could be the local boxing commissions, but it should fall between those two, because as the fighter, we're going to always neglect our bodies, we're going to neglect our minds based on our egos, and so it seems only logical that we would leave it in the hands of these promoters and or these boxing commissioners, and not even the managers, because all managers ain't good managers, you know. And these promoters, see, the reason why I say promoters is because if these promoters do not step up, well, then they will be held liable. That means their insurance premiums will go up in order to hold these fights. So I think they will be a prime candidate for something like this.
Well, Jabron, I think we've seen what happened up in New York as far as the insurance being one of the fallouts. But if I'm paying you a sanctioning fee, shouldn't you, you know, be making sure that, you know, that I'm healthy and ready to fight? Shouldn't that be part of your responsibility, especially when you want me to pay for, you know, a WBW 10 and gold belt, or, you know, a Cinco de Mayo belt? I mean, if you want me to pay a sanctioning fee, shouldn't you have more to do than just make the damn belt?
Yeah, I think they definitely should be concerned. My thing is, just as a in the business sense, it's like, okay, if I want to capitalize on this money, right, and keep getting this money, these guys got to be in the ring to fight. Because if you turn around, everybody's getting knocked out or, you know, getting injured and stuff like that, you ain't going to have no good guys to be around. You're just going to have these up-and-coming guys, because everybody's going to be killing each other. So my thing would be to make sure that I got guys getting in the ring that number one, is healthy, and that could continue giving me residual income. I don't want to hurt my profit.
Raymond, I mean, what do you guys pay sanctioning fees for? Do they have no I mean, do they have no responsibility other than, you know, to put the belt around your waist after the fight? You know, what do you think about that? And can you tie that into what Jabron is saying?
Well, I hear what Jabron said, but I don't think that sanctioning fees or shall I say organizations should have anything to do with this. The reason why is because everybody's fighting for a title. You got Joe Smith, Joe Russell, Carter, that worked at the office. There might be a fireman that, you know, just out here selling incense and boxing part time. What about all those guys that these belts don't even recognize? I mean, they're people too at the end of the day. So we have to take it, in my opinion, a step higher because these organizations are not affiliated with every single boxing promotion going on around the world. But these boxing commissions and these promoters have their hand directly tied into what happens in these fights, the health of the fighters. And the commissions are the ones that approve the bouts between the fighters. There's been bouts even here in Indiana where a guy was 2-0, and the commission wouldn't even let him fight a guy that was like 0-5. So if they're going to step up to take that much responsibility, I think you should keep on going with it. And that's just my opinion, because bringing in these people that are that own the belt, so to speak, that we spend all this money for these sanctioning fees, they're not covering but one, maybe two bouts at the most on a card. You're going to have 15 bouts, you know. So I think we just want to make it fair and give everybody an opportunity.
So you're saying that that this falls on the commissions, basically, from state to state, which we heard, but shouldn't we give, I mean, is there some way that we can give, I guess, a report card or something, you know, like, you know, maybe Texas Commission isn't, you know, taking care of the health of the fighter. Maybe, you know, maybe it's out here in California. Maybe Indiana. I mean, you know, in other words, should we look for consistency from commission to commission instead of, you know, every commission being responsible to itself?
No, absolutely, and what you said, man. But here's the thing. The reason why the commission should be responsible is because I don't know if you noticed, but every time a promoter puts on a fight, the commission gets a small percentage off of each and every single seat that promoter sells. And every time these fighters sell tickets, the commission gets a piece of that. Why would we not hold boxing commissions liable for these things if they got their hand in the pot? If you're being paid, well, then should you not also cover that as well? It just seemed like it should go hand in hand. If I got to give you, let's say, 75 cents or $1 off of every single seat I sell in my venue, and if I got an 18,000 venue or 90,000 venue, then you do the math on that. You mean to tell me they shouldn't be held responsible? I think they should. That's just my opinion.
Oh, it's making sense now. It's coming full circle, champ. Now I'm getting what you're saying now. Most definitely the commission. Oh, yeah. Because not so much the sanction, because the sanctioning bodies only have so much involvement or so much control with the situation. As we see with the Canelo Triple G situation, which I'm going to dive into that a little bit later, as where we, at the beginning of the year, we was like kind of not us on this panel, but the boxing audience was kind of praising the sanctions that they're pushing these mandatories and trying to get these guys to fight each other and to fight the best. But on the flip side, there's also an alternative motive, you know, which we'll dive into later. So definitely, I agree with you, Champ, about the commission. I didn't, you know, now that you put it into that perspective, yes, it definitely gives you a different angle with that situation. What's your thoughts on that, JK?
That was the reason why I phrased the question the way it was, because, you know, when we talked to the fighters on the show, the commission that was basically, either okaying these guys to fight or making the call while not actually putting the fighter. So, I was trying to find out what Layman told us, that it is the commission who gets this. That's why I was asking about the difference between the sanctioning bodies and between the commission, because I wasn't sure which one was collecting the fees per seat.
Most definitely, JK.
It seems like Scott is going to be kind of tired of this evening, so we're going to go ahead and move on. And Javon, you kind of mentioned the Canelo thing, and I had just read about it today. So you want to start out talking about, kind of bringing up what we're talking about,
Yeah, with this. I felt like the WBC was like the belts of all belts. That's just to me. Growing up as a kid, out of all the belts, I thought that green belt meant something. I thought, that's what everybody kind of shooted for, was the WBC belt. And is it me, or is the WBC belt pretty much like being put on the back burner, we would say, as a NABO belt or, one of the smaller belts? It's not represented or presented in the way of the yesteryears. Because I don't know what you're going to get into about Canelo or whatnot, but what I was bringing up about the sanctioning body is that going back to Sergio Martinez, Cotto fought him and won the WBC belt. Canelo beat Cotto for the WBC belt, but vacated the belt. The reason for the vacating of the belt was because the WBC wanted to put the best against the best and make him the mandatory fight for Triple G. So instead of fighting Triple G, as De La Hoya and them said at the time, oh, Canelo is not a true middleweight. So they vacated the belt. Now, here we go again. Canelo Triple G, September 16th. The middleweight belts are on the line. But guess what belt isn't on the line? Triple G WBC belt. This is where it is sickening to my stomach, is that Canelo avoided a lot of the top fighters. You know what? I'm going to call it like it is. Canelo avoided a lot of the slick African-American fighters, the styles that would give him problems, okay? Vacated, ducked, and made his own weight division as 154. Now, he's not fighting for the WBC belt, and if he beats Triple G September 16th, and on July 29th, if Charlo wins his mandatory WBC, Canelo gets to duck Charlo again at 154 and now at 160 because he has vacated once again away from the WBC belt. What's your thoughts on that, fellas? Like, have we got to this point where the WBC is really not meaning anything?
So, I'll say this, man, and I said it before, I'll say it again. Wu-Tang Clan, cash rules everything around me. Clan get the money, dollar beer, y'all. It's all about the money at the end of the day. It don't matter how great you think your fighter is, even if you think he can whoop everybody, does he need certain fights, or should I say, does he need to take every fight that comes his way? And the answer to that is no. If you have a fighter and he's the baddest dude on the planet, there are still fights that you want to stay clear of because, as I told you guys, every fight takes a little bit out of a guy when it's war. And if a guy has too many wars, eventually it's gonna break him down, it's gonna take away his desire. It's like it's hard to get to the top. But if every time you get into the ring, you gotta fight to get to the top, how many times do you think you're gonna wanna get to the top? And if you got a fighter, you wanna market him in a way where you can maximize the dollars, because at the end of the day, Canelo can be replaced. He's going to be replaced. And just like, no, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez was replaced. Mike Tyson was replaced. Heck, Lehman Brewster was replaced. Every great fighter, Sugar Ray Robinson, Sugar Ray Leonard, every great and every not great fighter can and will be replaced because this is boxing. People always coming, people always going. And so if you care about your fighter, and it's just me talking, if you care about your fighter, you only want to give him fights that really, really, really make sense and really, really, really make the maximize money at the end of the day, because at the end of the day, it's a business. And, you know, what they say, this is, let's say, boxing is a relationship where you love it, but it don't love you. And when you're gone, it moves on to the next person. So I'm trying to speak to you guys from a business standpoint of protecting a fighter, or if I'm a fighter with any sense, so to speak, you know, in Carnelo's shoes, I mean, yes, there are people out there I think that could probably beat him. There are people I think that could give him a really good fight. But if I want to market this guy right, if I want to move him right, there are just certain fights that I'm not going to put him in, whether I think he can win it or not. Because at the end of the day, them zeros make all the difference in the world. So that's my take on it.
I'm a little torn with this here because, you know, I'm kind of with Jabron. You know, I mean, you know, it was the guy with the green belt. You know, that everybody was gunning for. Everybody was trying to knock him off the perch. But, you know, then again, that was, you know, kind of before we got all of these different belts and all these different weight classes. But to me, you cannot claim to be the best if you haven't fought the best. If your career has, you know, you've been coddled all your career and, you know, you've been waiting till fights are tailor-made for you. isn't this the same thing that we accuse Floyd of? Many of these years, where he's not fighting this guy, and he should have fought this guy and whatnot, But yet and still, we do consider Floyd to be, probably the second or third best pound for pound all around. So I understand what you're saying, Layman, about the business, but I think there's also a certain amount of consideration that should be given to the fans. We are the ones buying the tickets, and if you don't satisfy the bloodlust of the fans, you're not going to get paid. So yeah, I can understand what you're saying, Layman, but I also think that the fans get short-sighted in this, because it seems like, like you said, it's all about the Wu-Tang Clan. Dollar bill, y'all. But remember who's spending them dollars.
Hey, I just want to say for the record that I agree with you, JK. You have to take into consideration of the fans, and that is the single most important thing at the end of the day, because if fans are not putting butts in the seats, well, then you're not eating. So at the end of the day, what I'm saying is, as a businessman, you have to take chances. Like, there are certain fights that you have to say, you know what, to keep the character of my fighter, to keep his name out there, then he needs this fight. Like me, perfect example. When I beat Klitschko, everybody was expecting for me to turn around and kill the next guy, but I didn't. I fought Kali Mihan, who was a friend of mine's, and I couldn't get past the friendship part, okay? So I already had the title. I beat Kali barely, but I realized that in order for me to keep the interest of my fans, I need to take a fight that they thought would be risque, thought that they may see a good fight. And so all the people out there, I took the fight with Andrew Golota. And so when I went out and did what I had to do with Golota, it was a chance because, hey, it went my way. But, we don't know. This boxing, it may not have went my way, but thank you, Most High, that it did. But the point I'm trying to make was that ain't a fight I had to take. I didn't have to take that fight. I could have went and took a lesser opponent, a lesser known opponent, a lesser dangerous opponent. But I did it for my career. I did it for the fans. You understand? It wasn't necessarily about the money, but I thought that the money would follow the success. So that's why I took that fight, and that's just speaking of myself. And there's been other fighters that has turned around and done what I thought was stupid things. Like, there has been champions that would turn around to fight a really hard fight right after winning the title, which I thought was pretty stupid, and they ended up losing their title. So, again, it's pro and con. You got to walk that wire. You got to walk down. You got to try to keep one hand just as even as the other hand. One hand is trying to maximize the dollars, your image, and keeping your brain intact. The other side is keeping the fans wanting to see you fight again, regardless of the money, and promoting yourself out there against somebody that the fans see as dangerous. So, it's a juggling act that you have to have as a fighter, as a manager, and that's why every fighter should have a manager, because you have to have somebody there looking at the whole bigger picture, because as a fighter, your only job and your only mentality should be, look, I can beat anybody. But that's good, but you need something to weigh you out. Yes, you can beat anybody, but at the end of the day, you might not be able to speak correctly, so let's get you safer fights, as safe fights as we can, and try to maximize the dollars. And then when the money's astronomical, just like this guy is going to fight Floyd, we all know this guy's not going to win. So did he, to be honest with you, because he can't be that stupid. I mean, I don't care what you say, but the point I'm trying to make is at the end of the day, does the risk outweigh the reward? And that's the checks and balances that we go through as a fighter on a daily basis.
Now,
champ. Go ahead.
When you was growing up, you had visions of being the champ, the heavyweight champion of the world?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now, with that being said, if this continues, like the Canelo situation of basically dropping the WBC, not paying sanctioning fees, not fighting for their title, if this continues with other fighters, with them feeling that way, what are our youth going to look up to besides, oh, I want to become a fighter just to try to make money? Like, it's no more pride and dignity into, look, I want to be a champ. I want to have the strap around my waist. If we keep pushing these sanctioning bodies to the side in a sense, like Canelo's basically doing, and eventually it's not going to be any belt. Because they feel like, hey, I can make my own lane.
Well, I actually like it, to be honest with you. I'm going to tell you why I like it. Because a lot of this money that you're giving to these sanctioning fees for these belts, what does it benefit you? I mean, they're promoting you. But now we got this thing called social media, which means you can promote yourself. Facebook Live, which means you can Facebook Live yourself. And everything you do, where you go, who you see, what you say, that in itself should be able to help a fighter if he's good and he knows how to sell himself to his people, because that's what it's all about. The belt is only there to make a statement, but your statement is actually the statement you make and how you carry yourself and what you say and what you do when you're in that ring and out of the ring. And so I'm not trying to knock a belt. Yeah, you know what? But at the end of the day, it's really just a piece of leather, some thread, and some metal. But the true value is in the presentation of a guy that can go out in Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and everything else in a nice suit, be able to have a great conversation, be able to make people want to watch him fight and get in the ring and fight. That, to me, is your sanctioning fee. What you get, what you put in it is what you get out. And see, now those sanctioning fees, in my mind, should not mean as much to these young fighters, because a lot of them, they got this social media. They got thousands and thousands of fighters, followers, and every time they beat somebody, they get more and more followers. That, to me, is a sanctioning fee, and that's one thing I love about Floyd. Floyd understands the power of the media. He understands that he don't need sanctioning fees. I mean, he doesn't need a belt, so he can keep that extra money in his pocket. Why? Because he knows how to use social media to get the word out about who he is, not a belt to say, oh, I am somebody, but social media and what I've done in the past, how I carry myself and what I'm going to do, that right there in itself is priceless. So I think that the belt is not as important as it used to be in my day because we didn't have social media. Because like I said, when you got these rankings, for instance, WBA, WBO, IBF, WBC, and all the mid-level belts, when they put you in magazine and things like that, that's because the media goes to Ring Magazine. But guess what? If you got a following just as big as Ring Magazine, do you still need that belt if the same amount of people still going to come watch you fight?
Okay, now I'm gonna kind of go the other way with you, because Oscar made a statement here And he says that he believes that the showdown between Triple G and Canelo is between the world's best middleweights. If it's between the best middleweights, why aren't you fighting at middleweight?
Well, now, you said fighting at middleweight, correct?
Well, this is Oscar saying. Oscar said, Canelo's promoter, Oscar De La Hoya, believes that the much-anticipated showdown could become a trilogy between the world's best middleweights.
Well, let me ask you, what weight again is Triple G?
Triple G is a middleweight. Triple G fights at middleweight. He's a middleweight champ. Oscar is the one that gave. De La Hoya is the one that gave up the WBC middleweight title because he said he wasn't a true middleweight. But you're going to fight at what, 164? Is it 164?
No. This fight is at 160. They're fighting at the middleweight limit of 160. But Canelo is the same. He has the same record as Conor McGregor at middleweight, 0-0-0.
Is this just all about business? I mean, you know, if he beats Golovkin, is he going to, you know, they're talking about a trilogy. There's plenty of guys that would be 160 to fight Canelo. I'm sure, you know, if not Thurman, I'm sure, you know, there's a couple others that would be looking forward to fighting me at 160. I just find it very peculiar that Oscar wants to market him as a middleweight at just particular times and against certain fighters. I would rather see a tournament type action. You put Triple G in as a middleweight because he has fought as a middleweight champ. And, you know, you set up a tournament and the winner fights Triple G rather than a trilogy between him and Canelo. I know Oscar wants to say that this is going to be, Leonard Duran or Leonard Hagler or a Hearns Duran type fight, but, you know, I mean, and I'll admit that boxing, you know, probably needs a fight like that in the lower weights. But the lower weights have been able to keep, to hold their own lately in the box office. So, Canelo is definitely going to get his fighters, his fans out here. The whole Mexican nation is going to be behind him. Of course, Triple G. The Eastern Bloc nations have kind of shown that they'll follow him. But Canelo is actually the one that's probably going to be the one that puts the most butts in seats. I'm looking for Triple G to bring most of the action. What do you, just a quick preview, what are you looking for in this fight, Lane?
You're asking, what am I looking for in this fight?
Yeah. Between Canelo and
I think, hey man, listen, I'm just one person giving my opinion, so you know I'm going to give it to you because you asked. I think that if Canelo goes out there and he boxes, I think it's going to be a much easier fight than we think. I think that his speed, his ability to counterpunch, as long as he don't get it in his mind that, you know, he's Mexican and he got to prove to the world that he's tough and he's doing it for La Familia and all that crap. Go out there, fight smart, don't take no chances. I think it will be a fairly easy fight. That's just what I believe, unless he tries to stand there with him with Triple G. But I think the Triple G, in terms of his footwork, I think the Triple G, if he's the type of dude, if you try to stand in front of him, he'll destroy you. But I just, after watching the fights of Canelo and seeing how much he has developed since he fought Floyd and matured, I just think that he's going to win this fight. And I think that it's going to be a lot easier than people think that it's going to be after watching a guy like Triple G struggle. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, the guy that he fought was a very good fighter, and a lot of people thought he won, and it can be argued. But I just think that Canelo, I think he's going to come out the winner, and I think it's going to be a fairly easy fight depending on what he does in this fight. I think if he go out there and box, stick and move, don't take chances until he see it, I think that it'll be an easy fight.
I'm going to go ahead and contradict you as I always do. We got a third guy here, but, I'm going to give my opinion and then let him, y'all might overrule me or he might have a completely different outlook altogether. But when you speak of footwork, being able to, being able to stick and move and that, I don't think that is Canelo's nature. I think especially in this fight, after waiting so long and then after the way he lost to Floyd, I just think that he's going to be out to prove a point. And I think that he'll get sucked into, that mano-a-mano with Triple G. And I think somewhere around maybe 9th or 10th round, I'm looking to see Canelo get up off the canvas. That's not to say he's going to get knocked out, but I'm looking for at least one, if not two, knockdowns by Triple G. What do you think, Jabron? What do you think, Jabron?
Well, I'm rooting for Triple G. And I haven't gave my final prediction until probably the day before the fight or the week of the fight. But I'm leaning with Triple G. But I can say over the last 3 days, I've been watching a lot of film, And I've noticed two things that stick out about Triple G that Canelo could capitalize on and why other opponents haven't picked up on it if you're really sitting and doing your film study. Number one, Triple G does not like you to go to the body. A lot of fighters have not taken the chance to go to the body. And the only fighter that I've seen really capitalize on the body where Triple G actually showed that he didn't like it was the Danny Jacobs fight. And then on the inside, number two, fighting on the inside, Canelo is a better fighter at close range because of his counter ability. And I think that the European fighters, specifically the Lomachenkos, the Triple Gs, the Kovalev, they're not good on the inside. That's why, even though it was some dirty tactics, but that's why Lomachenko lost to Salido the first time, because they're not immune to that rough inside fighting, attacking the body on the clinches of that nature. And number three is that Triple G do not throw punches when you throw punches. He does not exchange with people. He lets you throw, and when you finish throwing, then he'll follow up. But he will not pull a Canelo or a Danny Garcia, and that's what makes those two fighters great fighters, is that they can punch when you punch. Their timing is impeccable, and Canelo with the uppercut is great with catching people in the middle of exchanges. And people might have not picked that up. I don't know if you guys noticed that about Triple G, but he does not throw punches at the same time that you're throwing punches. If you get some time, go look at some film. He do not throw punches. And now I get what Floyd said when he said Triple G has no special effects. All he has is his jab and his hook, and that's it. And he just cuts the ring off great, and that's it. It's nothing special effects to him as far as using angles, bobbing and weaving, his defense, and things of that nature. So with more film study, I'm on the fence, guys. I don't know, man. I think I'm a little bit on layman's side here. I think he probably is going to outbox Triple G.
And I want to say I agree with you, JK. If Triple G, I put it like this: if Carnelo comes out there with that whole "I'm tough" and Mexican pride stuff, then yeah, he'll play right into the hands of a Triple G. But if he go out there with his thinking cap on, capitalize off his speed, off of his movement, his counterpunching, I believe that because the last guy that Triple G fought doesn't fight better on the inside than Carnelo, and he gave Triple G all that he can handle. So, you know, you fast forward to this fight, man, after watching that last fight of Triple G and then looking at how much Carnelo has matured, I mean, hey man, I think that the balance, you know, things tip in favor in my mind for Canelo.
Well, you know, I'll be kind of, you know, like honest here. You know, it's not like I got a dog in the race. But I have to think that when it comes to corner, I have to give the advantage also to Triple G, because I think that Abel will have him ready. Abel picks up on little subtle things too. And I think when it comes to preparation, I think I would also give the edge to Triple G. But you know, it's not, Langley, as you know, a lot of fights are won before you get to the dressing room. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, whether this is going to be one of those in the sense of Canelo trying to prove his manhood. And that's mostly, Abel and a good fight plan. And punch and power, I think I would have to give to Triple G. But, like I said, I'm a little prejudiced here too, so I'll admit that also. Layman, there's been some other kind of, I don't know whether you want to call them rumors, innuendos, or whatever, but there's also been some talk of Mr. Anthony Joshua. And people are saying that, Anthony Joshua is the savior of heavyweight, division. Len, why is Anthony Joshua more popular over here, at least with the press, than Deontay Wilder, our own homegrown heavyweight champion?
I can say a lot of things I'm gonna be careful what I say.
This is my show. I keep telling you, this is my show. You can say whatever the hell you want. I pay for this.
Yeah, well, you know, this is
not,
and you're right, and I appreciate that. Well,
I don't want you to be kicked out of the house. Yeah.
I'm gonna try to see it as best I can without just being wrong with it. Maybe you'll pick up with what I'm trying to say. Anthony Joshua, he speaks the King English. Look at the people in his corner. He's a light-complected brother. He's from England. So, you know, he kind of got a support system that a dude like Deontay Wilder don't have, because everybody around him is our complexion. And, you know, not to say he don't have followers of different nationalities, but, you know, he don't speak the King's English mind, right? You know what I mean? So there's just a lot of things I kind of want to say, but I'm trying my best not to really go there. I mean, you know, we all know that complexion also plays a part, even as being a black man. You know, we even talk as people of color to look at other people of color depending on their color and judge them that way, because that's the American system. That's where I want to go with that, man. And listen, and it's not all that. Joshua can fight. He's a tremendous fighter. He beat a really big name in Vladimir Klitschko, who reigned for so long. He beat their champion. He beat their hero. You know, the first, since Rocky Marciano, however long ago that was. That's kind of what I'm trying to say, man. I'm just trying not to just come out and beat me shit, because it ain't all because Anthony Wilder's this big black figure, and, you know, he wears jewelry, and he, you know what I mean? He's not the quiet and, you know, and let's have tea type of dude. You know, he's a real Negro, you know what I mean, so to speak. So I hope you kind of read between the lines or read the lines of what I'm trying to say.
Well, I'm gonna kick the goddamn line aside and step all over it. Did Layman just play the light skinned brother card on us, Jabron?
Yeah, I think the politically correct Layman is back.
Hey man, you need to cut
hey,
that
JK,
out.
Hey JK, you ready to respond to this, or is me?
You
am I wrong in what I said?
Huh?
Was I wrong in what I said? Before you guys
No, you're not wrong, because that's your opinion. Everybody has their right to your opinion. And me and JK are going to give our opinion. So, JK, me or you?
You.
Okay. Layman Brewster, that is the most BS I've ever heard. Once again.
Oh, my God.
Once
wow.
again, here we go, because I'm going to tell you my opinion and why he gets more recognition. I'm going to be straight up and real with it. I ain't got to worry about nobody else looking at me or the media coming after me or anything like that. So I'm going to keep it just real. Deontay Wilder is hood. I'm being straight honest. The company he keeps around him, their hood, and I'm gonna point out some things. Everybody has choices. I'm not sitting here telling you that Anthony Joshua is an angel, because he has ran into out of the ring trouble. But once again, there's choices. When he got in his trouble, he made a choice. Am I gonna keep these same people around me? And I'm going to keep going down this road, or I'm going to turn my life around and become one of the greatest fighters of all time. And that's what he done. Because, like I said, they both had troubles outside of the ring, but they made choices. Joshua chose to go the upper route to keep his circle small, saw who was his true friends, who was his real peoples, kept them around, and he opened his eyes up to a lot of opportunities far as networking. I follow this guy. I really dug deep into this guy. The things that he does in the community, a lot of events that he attends, he puts on, he's involved in, that's not shared it, you know, to the light, that you got to go dig and find these things. And he's a very respectable guy in all communities, not just black, not just white. He does a lot of things. And if you've been noticing over the last month, he's been doing a lot of marketing and a lot of networking with a lot of U.S. companies, with Mr. Mayweather. And probably had, I'm not sure, but maybe had a talk with Uncle Al. Who knows? But that's why, you know, Wilder haven't, to me, haven't grown up yet. You know, you representing the WBC and the heavyweight title and the champion, the U.S. champion, and you shouldn't have a lot of these out of the ring, domestic violence, battery, all these different things going on. And but you calling yourself, you know, the bomb squad and all this stuff, like, it's time to grow up, you know. Just like Zab had to pack his bags and leave Brooklyn and go to Vegas to try to turn his boxing career around. And we saw in the middle he did that. He changed his attitude and his behavior and people he kept around him, and that opened up doors. What we saw him on Showtime commentating and doing interviews and things of that sort. So it's about the choices.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, okay? But you have to also look at it from another standpoint. If you don't know better, you can't do better. And that ain't to say that Beyonce's not happy with his skin. You know what I mean? It's like, everybody don't want what everybody else wants. Just like Charles Barkley said, I'm not a role model. Everybody don't want the same thing. You understand? So where I'm coming from is, look, this is who this man wants to be. He got these people around him. So did LeBron James. The thing is, if these guys ain't getting him in no trouble and he's happy, then I say, let this man be. Now, if he want to put on his business cap and maximize the money, as much money as he can, then yes, there are certain things that one has to do to obtain that, and obviously Joshua is doing that. But at the same time, if Wilder's happy, hey man, just be happy for him, because what he's reaching for and the direction he wants to go may not be the same thing out of life that Joshua wants. So let's say, I mean, it doesn't make him a less fighter. It doesn't mean, oh, Joshua's going to win. It doesn't mean anything. It just, you know, these are two different people going two different roads, and that's basically what it is in a nutshell. You know, we can't say, oh, he should be doing this. Because you got to do what works for you at the end of the day. Because,
hold up, Lane. You know, did you just say that long as he's happy and people around him ain't getting him in trouble or causing him no harm, that's what you just said?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. Okay, I'm going to tell you what came out of Mr. Deontay Wilder's mouth and out of his representative mouth. He stated he was out of town on a trip. He came back, and someone was driving his vehicle. So that's why he had no knowledge of any marijuana being in his vehicle. So with Joe Mock saying that he's happy with the people around him and them not getting him in any trouble, so if that's the case, him not being responsible and within your vehicle, but number two, the person that's around you who's driving that vehicle gonna put you in that situation to have something like that in your vehicle.
Well, hey, I agree with you on that, man. If that is the case, see, I didn't know what all of that was about when I heard that happened to him. If that's the case, then yes, there are changes that definitely need to be made. I mean, absolutely. But what I'm saying is that, I mean, outside of knowing that, I'm saying if he's happy and he's winning and well, then let him do what he thinks is best, you know, because we got to find our own way in life. But if this is causing problems, as what you just said, that's the first time I've heard that. I say, yes, changes do have to come. You have to consider everything that you come from and everything that's in front of you and what you have right now. You know, you can't throw that away based on your love for your friends, because at the end of the day, they'll just find somebody else to milk, so to speak. So, yeah, I agree with you on that, man. I didn't know that was the case.
Yeah, that's why I was bugging when you were saying this and defending him. I'm like, really? Really? And, I mean, that's just lately. I mean, I'm not going to go into depth of his personal stuff like that, but he has a pretty long rap sheet that's kind of been held under that rug.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. See, the thing I try not to do is get in people's personal lives, and that's just me. So I didn't know. You know, I didn't know. But, yeah, man, if that was the reason why he got locked up and got in trouble, then he definitely got to clean out his, you know, sweep the dust off, so to speak, man, because you can do bad by yourself, you know?
Right. But this is what I'm saying. I feel like that has a lot to do why his stardom, because a lot of investors and a lot of people don't want a lot of that excessive baggage. You get what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I'm saying it too, man, because, you know, there were people in my career that, you know, I had to get rid of. There were people in my career that I didn't know I needed to get rid of, you know. You live and you learn. But, you know, like I said, that was the first I heard, so I didn't know what all went down until just now. And I'm saying if that be it the cause that got him in that kind of trouble, then he definitely needs to clean out his closet.
Layman, I want to go a different way here because Deontay, I mean, you know, he's one of the guys that we followed him all throughout his career. He's been on the show quite a few times before he became heavyweight champion. And being with Al Heyman, and we know, you know, how Al has a reputation of being able to protect his fighters, and I think this is one of the things that, you know, Al may be a little guilty of here, protecting Deontay, and maybe really pursuing, you know, like you said, you know, trying to run the young man's personal life. But there are also guys like you that have been former heavyweight champions and some that haven't, that have a tremendous amount of influence over these young men. Sometimes all it takes is a phone call, you know, and you know, not necessarily berating a young man or anything like that, but sometimes just a call from a friend is something that can wake you up, especially when you know that this person really has your best interests at heart. Now, that being said, I also have to agree with some of the things that Jabron has said. I understand that you got there, you know, with the bomb squad reputation and that, but once you become a heavyweight champion, as people used to say, and I'm sure you know, Langan, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. You know, he's been through a lot of things, you know, with his young daughter, so we can't accuse him necessarily of, you know, just of being a hooligan. But, you know, that was a part of his cause, still is. But there are things that you need to do to mature. And I think part of that maturity process is putting the right people behind you. And if you trust, you know, I mean, once trust has been broken, it's very hard to get it back. And people aren't going to necessarily say, oh, well, you know, that was his boy's fault. No, they're looking at him because he's the heavyweight champion. And because, like I said, heavy is the head that wears the crown. Now, I think that, you know, maybe, you know, and I'm not a promoter, I'm not a manager, none of that. But I think that Deontay, his star here in the United States, hasn't been polished enough. I think, you know, there should have been you know, like Ali, and at the time, I mean, you know, he might not have been the most personable fighter, but, you know, he went to some of the little places, you know, he appeared at some of the press conference. I'm not saying he should be a starter like Shannon Briggs, but I'm saying, you know, that I just think that as an American heavyweight, if we were able to promote Larry Holmes and buy him a whole town, I'm sure that in this modern day and age, Deontay's team, as well as Deontay, I mean, Deontay is definitely on social media, and he sees the same thing that everybody else does. So, you know, sometimes even though it brought you here, you do have to make some modifications and changes. And just to kind of grow up. I do agree with him with that. And I think also there's some parts of his game that he definitely needs to tighten up before he goes in with a young man like Joshua. I would think that before he fought Joshua, he would have at least, and maybe that's too many, I don't know. But I think that there are some skills that he needs to hone up before he goes in with such a dangerous young man as Anthony Joshua.
Well, I you know what, man? I want to say I disagree with that last statement about him needing more fights to fight Joshua. Me personally, I don't think that he do. I think if they fought right now, it would be a great fight. And I think that the one that wanted it the most is the one that would win. I think they both have a good chance of winning. I actually believe, in my mind, in terms of professional boxing, I believe that Wilder edges him slightly in experience, in ring experience. Not ring generalship. Ring generalship I give to Joshua. But experience-wise, just watching both of these guys mature as professionals, I would have to say I believe that Wilder has made the biggest transition of the two into all the playing that he used to do. He don't play as much. He's more focused. But I want to say something, man, and, you know, thank you for allowing me to speak my piece, but this is just me through my eyes. It's hard to say this because a lot of people are going to take this the wrong way. And to be honest, I don't care. This is just how I feel about it. So I think that I think that guy like Deontay Wilder scares white America. He a big, tall, black dude, big, you know, big nose. He's a Negro, and he don't try to impress the white man. He don't try to speak their English. He don't try to dress and do the things that they say is okay for an American to do. You know, he's just doing him. And I appreciate the good and the bad. Maybe he don't speak the English that everybody wants him. Maybe he don't have the best people around him. But you know what? I think that the brother's doing the best he can for what he know. And I know myself, watching brothers grow up around me, your complexion has a lot to do with it. That's why you don't see a whole lot of dark skin athletes in the light, so to speak, you know. Yeah, it's okay to be a small little dark-skinned dude, but to be a big dark-skinned dude and to be a fighter on top of that, hey, man, that's just me talking. You have to be in my mind. You have to know history like I know it, like Jack Johnson. People don't know. They made the movie King Kong because of Jack Johnson, because he was this black man that had these white women. And so there are a lot of things that also plays into what I'm saying, but it goes into the racist history of this country. But that's why I was kind of saying, and I was trying not to really go there. You got a guy like Joshua, you know, light-complected, handsome man. Yeah, he's a big guy, but he smiles. He speaks the King English. He got all these white people around him. But then you got a guy in Deontay Wilder, black man, black everything. And at the end of the day, he's a dark black man. And is that who you want your kids paying money to go see? Is that the man that you want to support? He don't speak on English. He don't go and participate in the things that we think he should participate in. So, no, we're not going to give him the attention, even though he is an American. We're going to stick with the guy with the King's English.
Oh, my man. I love it. Because now, I'm glad. I'm kind of glad you brought Jack Johnson into the subject because I can also kind of, you know, I'm going to be showing my age here. But I remember, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson, man. You know, when he came out, had to do and was driving the Cadillac and whatnot. I mean, you know, he was also, you know, one, you know, known as a womanizer and whatnot. But he talked with his fist. Now, when you talk about Deontay Wilder, see, I think Deontay Wilder, under any other circumstances, would probably fit into the slot that you want your heavyweight to be. You want him to be big, black, scary, and ugly. This was what we promoted our heavyweight fighters to be. When it was Mike Tyson, it was saying, you know, the little ugly guy that went in there and just knocked people out. You know, he was a savage. He was a beast. I'm just talking about marketing now. You know, just talking about marketing and social media and whatnot. We might not want to see that in some of our little guys, but in the heavyweight division, you know, I mean, Ali was the first one to come out and talk about I'm pretty and I'm this and that. I mean, before, you know, you had Sonny Liston, Big Bear, then you had Joe Frazier, you know that guy down there, you know, from New York, that was just knocking people out. I mean, this is always kind of played into the heavyweight genre. Like I said, until Ali, now you have another, as you say, pretty boy heavyweight. Layman, do you think that with the current political situations where, you know, Black Lives Matter and the current political situation, Do you think that this is also a part of the reason why Deontay doesn't get the recognition that he should?
I mean, you already know the answer. Let's do some history. Show me, with the exception of a Michael Jordan, show me a big black man that everybody loves. Just one.
I mean, that's a different sport, and it's kind of different in basketball because, I'm saying, you know, and you know, what I'm trying to more or less get you to do is tell me, you know, why do you think that the political time. The political climate has all of a sudden invaded its way into boxing, or do you think it was always there, but we've just kind of flipped the script now and we're going back to, you know, the pretty boy, you know, Muhammad Ali type of portrayal, you know, without the draft dodges and all like that. But I mean, you know, as far as now we're imitating the pretty guy instead of the guy that maybe has come up through the ghetto, let's say, and you know, his problems have managed to stay with him.
Hey, amen. You know, everything that I have to say regarding Deontay Wilder, in my mind, is back to his skin complexion. And, no, I mean, he speaks well. Maybe he don't speak in the way that the media, the people that pay the tickets, the people that you know, bring in these dollars, maybe he don't fit that bill, but like I said, man, you just go back in history, and, you know, it's very easy to see that America has always had a problem with a dark-skinned heavyweight fighter. And, I mean, we can go through the 80s, the 90s, we can go down the road, and I assure you, I can prove to you how a black man who was a light complected, who's a brown complected, dark brown complected, can still have a greater success than a dark skinned black man in the sport of boxing. It's something that makes people afraid when you get a dark skinned black man. I mean, you take Joe Frazier, for instance. He won a gold medal. Muhammad Ali was favored. And, you know, he called him Uncle Tom, all this and that. But that wasn't the case. But the people still took the side of Muhammad Ali. You know, we can just go down the list. Marvin Hagler, Sugar Ray Leonard. People took Sugar Ray Leonard. It's always a complexion thing. At the end of the day, man, I mean, for us, if you just go pull up salaries of all fighters that are black, and I guarantee you, the lighter complexed fighters, the brown skinned fighters, has made more money than the dark skinned fighters. And for some reason, the dark skinned fighters has always looked like this enemy. I'm not talking about the Spanish fighters like Chocolato or whatever. I'm not talking about Spanish. I'm talking about Negro American dark fighters in this country, in the heavyweight division. I'm telling you, there is a pattern, and all you have to do is your research, and you'll see what I'm telling you to be true.
Well, I'm to follow your page, so I know a lot about this. and I appreciate it. Jabron, what do you think that the current political climate has a lot to do with possibly the way that Deontay is not accepted?
My honest opinion is what Layman was saying. There is some truth to what he's saying, and in our history, but I'm speaking for today, right now, today, and me having experienced life and working with, you know, in corporate America and different things of that sort. I got to be honest with you. At this point, when you talk about the marketing and all of that, I just think it's a bunch of BS, man. It's a bunch of BS. It's an excuse, because my thing is, I can easily, you know, you can easily say it from the outside looking in of that sort, but I just look at the marketing aspect as this gentleman being the size that he is, him being an athlete. Before boxing, he was into other sports. Now he's in the platform and getting the check, getting money where he have access, right? When you have access, that opens up opportunity. Opportunity to do what? To network. Now, if I'm in his position, I would cross over. I would be crossing over. I would definitely be networking with football and basketball players, sports that he loved and played as a youth and was very good at it. That crossover, you don't have to be serious about it. Just the speculation of, oh, possibly Deontay Wilder going to try out to be a tight end for you know, the Jaguars or the Texans, anything, just the crossover. It's so many avenues that he could go to market himself and get his brand out there for people to know that he's the champ. Like, not buying that, Layman. I'm not buying it, dog. I've been working in marketing and business, and I've seen the blackest of the blackest people. Trust me. When you got good ideas and you got good sense and dollars make sense, that's all. At the end of the day, they worried about that green. So it's about broadening your horizons, opening your eyes, and taking advantage of your opportunity. And trust me, he has a lot of opportunity that he can take advantage of. Trust me.
I'm not saying that's all that there is. You know, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that plays a role in it, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, I mean, hey man, maybe you're right. I mean, I'm not in his personal business, so I don't know what he is or what he isn't doing. You know, I'm here for any fighter to try to help guide them and give them, you know, instructions on not making mistakes or, you know, making some good things happen in their life while they're still fighting and staying focused and dedicated. That's my role, man. But when you ask me how do I see things in terms of Deontay Wilder versus why Anthony Joshua is getting all this hype and everything, you know, I just have to tell you what I see from where I'm standing. But, you know, everybody's not in my shoes, and I don't know everything, and I don't claim to know everything, but I just tell you what I think and what I see on my side.
Right. I'm saying, now I'm not taking nothing away from him. I mean, you know, he's gotten as far as he got. Me personally, I like Deontay Wilder. I mean, we need some type of character in boxing, and you know, he's true to himself. That's one thing I can take away from that. He's true to himself. He's going to be him. It, like you said, no matter, he's not going to try to put on a show for the white man and this and that. You know, that's understandable, but at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, the question that JK was asking about the marketing. All right, do you want to make dollars or you want to do what makes sense to you? And what he's doing is what makes sense to him, not what makes the dollar sense for what good for him.
Right, I get it.
Yes. Well, gentlemen, otherwise we'll be on until 8 o'clock still talking. You know how it is when we start talking. So tonight I'm going to give the final word first, and we're going to end with Layman, since we didn't hear from him last week, and he hasn't turned into a political layman, so we're going to give him the last word tonight. But I want to talk about this possible trilogy that they're talking about between Triple G and Canelo. Triple G is, I believe, he's 35 years old, and I can definitely see for him, it definitely makes sense. I'm not sure if I want to see a trilogy of Triple G and Canelo. There's a lot of other young lions out there that are true middleweights that I think deserve a shot at both of them. And I think, whereas, once again, this is a great ploy for Oscar because Golden Boy only has one cash cow, and there's no need in risking it unless he gets blown out in his first fight. So I commend Oscar for a brilliant strategy, getting this already set up so that Triple G is not only set up to have the three greatest paydays of his life, providing his first one is at least a good fight. It doesn't have to be a great fight, just has to be a good fight. And it'll set up this trilogy, and it'll keep Canelo safe without having to risk anything more. You already know what Triple G has coming. You already, I'm sure you can speak more to this than we can on the outside. But fighting the same guy three times, I don't think there's a whole lot of preparation that's necessary. And you both kind of get familiar with each other. So I think this is one of the safest moves that I've seen a promoter set up even before the first fight has started. And that's kind of my final word for today. So, Jabron, you want to give us your final thoughts?
Well, you're absolutely right. I got to agree on that. I got to definitely give De La Hoya and Tom Lafler their props on that. I think it's a cash-out fight for them in the sense of cashing out on Canelo because he's the last cash cow with Golden Boy and trying to make that a trilogy that they could capitalize on. And Triple G, far as his exit strategy for his career, because he's on his way out the door. And for both of them, in the high risk, high reward, because both of them are high risk and they're both getting highly rewarded. And it's sad to say that duck season has begun. I mean, can't hate on them for jumping on the most money, but once again, if they do have a trilogy, we will get to see the Danny Jacobs rematch, the Laura rematch, or a possible Charlo fight, or Lemieux. So just keep support boxing. Thank you guys, as always. I love picking you guys' brain, and y'all always keep it real and giving me the opportunity to do this. And can't wait to talk to you guys next week, man. I'll throw it to Layman.
Hey, man, I always say thank you guys, because you guys make this show, and it makes it pleasurable for a person like me. I'm honored every time I get to come on here. I thank you guys for allowing me to voice my opinions. And, you know, like I say, man, I don't know it all. I just know what I know. I know what I feel. I know what I think. I know what I've seen. I know what I've been through. I just try to share that, man. It never hurts my feelings when somebody disagrees with me, because, you know, the whole thing is maybe I'm looking at it from only first person, so to speak. So, you know, I always welcome everything you guys got to say. I thank everybody who tunes into the show and hears the rhetoric that we be spewing. And I thank them for supporting us. And as they continue to support boxing, man, it really goes greater than you could ever imagine what it does for these fighters. And, you know, you can follow me at Lamon Brewster, LamonBrewster. That's at Facebook, Instagram, and or Twitter.
All right, well, guys, hey, man, once again, good kicking it with you like every Sunday. Look forward to doing it again. And Jabron, I'll see you Tuesday on the Pugilist Corner. And, have a great night, everyone, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.